You can look for KBOO Out Loud. Now, I think you might know, but if not, this show is created by volunteers. My name is Carla. This marks my 12th year of volunteering with KBOO. In the studio here with me is Sam Engineering. He helps the show be broadcast. We are both volunteers. There are hundreds and hundreds of people behind the scenes that help make this radio station function. And we are recruiting volunteers to help create the Out Loud radio show. You can contact us directly at outloudradio@gmail.com, or you also can find out more information on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/volunteer. There's lots of free training. You do not need previous experience, and we're looking for, you know, different ways for folks to get involved. But we would love to have you join the Out Loud team. Now, we're going to take a short music break, and we'll be back in just a few moments to speak with Dennis, but the song that we're going to be featuring is from a local group called The Eyes. They perform around town, and their next local show is this Thursday, January 16th at Sloan's Tavern, which is located at 36 North Russell Street. Loud Machines are also part of this show. So here are The Eyes. The song is titled An Eye. Welcome back to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO. That song was titled An Eye from a group called The Eyes, based here in Portland. Their next local show is this Thursday, January 16th at Sloan's Tavern, located at 36 North Russell Street. Loud Machines are also part of the show. Next, I'd like to move us into a conversation about celebrating the new year, and I'd like to welcome Dennis to the show. Dennis, are you with us?
Hi, Kibu Carla. How are you? Happy New Year.
Hello. Happy New Year to you. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. First, I want to let folks know, if folks aren't already familiar with the Asian Pacific Islander Pride organization, how would you describe the group?
Thanks, Carla. Well, API Pride, which is short for Asian Pacific Islander Pride, of course, is a group that's led and by and for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people of Asian and Pacific Islander descent in Oregon. And our primary goal is to provide safe and supportive environments and opportunities to celebrate, educate, and bring our communities together.
Fabulous. And the group has been around for a couple of years, correct?
Yeah, I would say more than a couple of years. So I've been with API Pride just over 4 years. But the group has actually been around for over 25 years. And we actually went through a name change maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. We used to be called Asian Pacific Lesbian and Gays, but now our name is Asian Pacific Islander Pride, just to be more inclusive of the entire queer community. So some people may have heard of us when we were formerly Asian Pacific Lesbian and Gays.
Okay, well, that's great. I guess the group is evolving, and it's great to just include the pride for everyone that's part of the community. So let's segue into the celebration that's coming up. And the event that you guys are planning looks like a lot of fun. And I do want listeners to know that this is a family-friendly event, so children are welcome. But let listeners know about this big banquet you guys are hosting.
Sure. So our Lunar New Year banquet is an annual event, and it's API Pride's largest community event of the year. So it brings together, typically in the last few years, we've had close to about 100 people, which is great, and it's a lot of fun. This year, it's going to be taking place Saturday, January 25th, 2014, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Szechuan Chef Restaurant, which is in John's Landing neighborhood of Portland, 5331 Southwest McAdam Avenue. The banquet is a lot of fun. It's not only great food, but it's a chance for everybody in our community to get together, to meet new friends, to get reacquainted with friends they haven't seen in a while, and just to celebrate an awesome new year and to look forward to 2014. Our banquet is typically a combination of different things. So there's good food, getting to meet people, and we also have some performers who perform at the banquet, which is also a lot of fun. It's a good chance to showcase people from our community. And this year we're going to do something a little bit different. So the theme of our banquet in 2014 is building new friendships. And so the goal of the banquet is for people to make connections and with new people. And one of the ways that we're going to do it is after dinner, we're going to have people move around a bit, and we're going to play some fun and silly games, and so people get to know each other and also get to know API Pride and why others are involved with the group. And so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay.
It's not just going to be a formal sit-down. We're going to get people moving around, and it's going to be a good time.
Yes, and I noticed as part of the evening as well, yeah, the dinner is included in the price of the tickets, as well as the games. I am going to ask you about the performers in just a moment, but I see you're also going to have a silent auction and prizes and, you know, basically a lot of interactive stuff, it sounds like.
Sure, yeah. So throughout the dinner, we'll have a program that goes on simultaneously. And so you mentioned the tickets. I forgot that tickets are going to be $15 in advance online and $20 at the door, but we encourage everybody to buy tickets online. We have a link at our website and also on our Facebook page where people can go to purchase the tickets. And as well, we have volunteer opportunities if people want to help out. And if they do volunteer, they'll get a discount on their ticket, and we won't turn away anyone for lack of funds. We want to make it a very accessible event for all of our community members. So the ticket price does include dinner, performances, and of course, yes, we'll have other banquet activities for everybody there as well. I also want to give a shout out to our sponsors and donors, because we'll be having some raffle prizes and in addition to people who win the games will get some prizes, and as well as silent auctions. So I'd like to thank our sponsors and donors for supporting our event. So specifically, Nectar Frozen Yogurt Lounge, they have a couple of stores in Selwood and also in Bridgeport, Bridgeport Village, I believe. Also, Kat Cheng, who is a graphic designer, she's donating some one of her designs to the banquet. And Portland Center Stage is also donating tickets for us to raffle off. And finally, Queer Doc, the Queer Documentary Film Festival in Portland, will also be donating tickets. So thanks to all of those businesses for supporting our event and our community.
You know, it really sounds like a lot of fun that you've got a mix of stuff, you know, between entertainment and people being involved and engaged with each other. I also want to let folks know in your media materials, I noticed in addition to this being an all ages event, the venue, the restaurant or, you know, the venue where it's happening is wheelchair accessible, and there will also be some gender neutral restrooms available. So really everyone is welcome. And I just want to repeat the details in case there are anyone, if anyone's just tuned into the conversation. My name is Carla. You're listening to Out Loud, the Queer Culture Radio show. I'm speaking with Dennis, and we're talking about the banquet that is coming up on Saturday, January 25th, and being presented by the Asian Pacific Islander Pride Organization. And like you were saying, Dennis, it sounds like this is a really large event for you guys. With the online tickets that are available, where should folks go to buy their tickets ahead of time?
Well, they can go to a couple places. Probably the best place is our Facebook page. If they just go to Facebook, log in, and search for API Pride, they'll find our group, or Asian Pacific Islander Pride. If they want the exact website address, it's www.facebook.com/ and then API Pride. So that will bring them to our Facebook page. And then if they click on events, they'll find the annual banquet, and then there'll be a link there for them to purchase tickets online.
Wonderful.
And then the second way, mm-hmm. I don't want to confuse people too much, but we also have a website that people can visit. It's api-pride.blogspot.com. And at the top of our blog page, there's a whole write-up blog entry about our annual banquet, and they'll see the link for purchasing tickets online there as well.
Okay, that sounds great. And then the last thing I want to make sure folks know, I mean, we're going to keep talking about this event, but another way to contact you, I noticed your email address is the name of the organization as well. It's apipride@gmail.com. So if folks want to ask any direct questions or find out some more details, you can certainly get a hold of Dennis or the rest of the group. And maybe let's take a moment, Dennis, and let us know. I know there's a large group of volunteers that are involved with AP, with the group. And so what other kind of things, you know, besides the banquet, the team of volunteers that you guys have, what are some of the other events that you do in the community? Because I know you guys do other things. I've seen you marching in the parade at Pride. And so what other kind of things do you guys do during the year?
Yeah, so the banquet is our largest event, but I would say Pride is the next largest, if not in, the same in terms of size and the amount of time that we put into organizing it. So yes, we do march and have a booth during the Pride Festival in Portland. And then we usually try to do distribute the rest of our events throughout the years, kind of almost having, you know, about one event per month during the entire year. So for upcoming events in 2014 in February, we don't have a date or a location yet. We're still ironing that down. But we plan to co-host a screening of the documentary film called Papers. It chronicles stories of undocumented youth. I think specifically those who have graduated high school and then, you know, they're kind of struggles and issues that they have to deal with as undocumented youth having grown up in the United States and finished high school, but, you know, maybe they have trouble gaining employment or getting their driver's license, et cetera, et cetera. So we're co-hosting that with the Student Alliance Project in Portland in February. And so I encourage people to stay tuned to our Facebook and our website to learn more about that as details are forthcoming. And then in March, the next event that we're planning is to have an informal dinner and social at the Red Rogue Tea House, which is in Old Town Chinatown, March 15th from 5 to 8 p.m. So that's just an informal dinner. It might be, maybe even be a happy hour for people to get together and reconnect and socialize and enjoy some great food.
Great.
So that's what we have on tap for this year, but typically throughout the year we have a lot of different types of events. In the summer we'll typically have a barbecue outside at one of the public city parks. We'll barbecue, enjoy food, socialize, play some volleyball or frisbee or some other activities. And then in December usually we'll have a winter solstice celebration, which is another social event, and sometimes it'll be a potluck event. And then also after Pride, it's become a tradition now, we co-host an event called Rice, Beans, and Collard Greens with Portland Latino Pride and Portland Black Pride, which is a post-Pride celebration for the queer people of color community. And that's usually a dance party at a local bar or dance club. Okay. So that gives you a kind of a quick rundown of all the different types of activities that we do.
Yeah, and it sounds like you guys are, I really appreciate all the diverse things that you're doing in the community, you know, and bringing people together to socialize and share food and culture and music. And it sounds like you've got a lot going on. So I also want to ask, you know, around one of the things you mentioned about the big banquet that's coming up. Again, the date is Saturday, January 25th. You mentioned that you might be needing some volunteers to get involved, you know, the day of the banquet. And that would, you know, potentially offer someone a discounted ticket to get into the banquet. But do you have any specific ideas on what you might need volunteers to do, or offer any examples of things that you know your volunteers are going to be doing?
Sure. I think where we need help right now is set up for the event. So the current planning committee is going to be arriving a bit earlier, you know, before the, maybe an hour or so before the event begins, to set up for the event. And so we'll need some people to help with that. Volunteers could also be at the registration desk, checking people in, showing them to their tables. Some of our tables are sponsored tables, so there's some reserved seating. So that's another thing I actually wanted to mention, to digress a little bit. If people are interested in sponsoring tables, we have table sponsorships available, and that's a means for us to do some fundraising for the group, because we are a nonprofit, volunteer-based group. So getting back to the volunteer opportunities, some other ways to volunteer would be to help us sell raffle tickets during the event, and since it's an all-ages event, sometimes during the activities we might need some people to watch some of the kids that are there, so that everybody can partake in the activities. That gives you an idea of some of the things that we need help with. Also, setting up decorations and also cleaning up after the event.
Okay. And I want to folks know, again, they can contact you and the rest of the group at apipride@gmail.com. And, you know, thank you for that, you know, kind of some ideas on how folks can get involved. But again, if they'd like to just buy their ticket ahead of time and go and, you know, be part of the crowd, again, this event, it's the Lunar New Year Banquet, Building New Friendships, happening Saturday, January 25th, starting at 5:30 to 8:30, and then dinner served at about 6:15 in the evening. And, you know, with those examples, you know, for volunteers, it's great to hear different ways that people can help out. Is it just a matter of people sending you an email, you know, saying that they're interested, or is there any process for new volunteers to say, you know, do they have to apply, or can they just send you an email to get involved like that?
So thanks for asking that, Carla. I forgot to mention that. But yeah, they could send us an email. That would be one way. The other way is on our online ticket page, we also have an option for people to volunteer. And so if they go to purchase tickets online and they select the option to volunteer, I believe the discount for the volunteers will be applied to their ticket purchase price, so they can do it all in one stop. And I do want to encourage people to purchase their tickets online, because as we're planning the event, it's much easier if we know ahead of time the number of people who are coming versus everyone buying the day of. And there will be room for people the day of, but some of the seats may be limited depending on how many people purchase ahead. So I really encourage people to go online and purchase tickets ahead. Then you'll get a $5 discount as well. So
all right.
There's an economic incentive as well.
right. Okay. And again, if folks didn't catch the details, my name is Carla. We're talking with Dennis. Dennis is part of the Asian Pacific Islander Pride Organization, and they are presenting the 2014 Lunar New Year Banquet at the end of the month, Saturday, January 25th. And tell us about the location again. It's a restaurant. I've never actually been there, but tell us about the location.
Sure, it's a Szechuan Chef restaurant. It's 5331 Southwest McAdam Avenue in Portland. It's in the John's Landing neighborhood of Portland. It is a Chinese restaurant. I believe it's been in that location for quite a while, although it recently changed owners and names the last couple of years, so people may have known it as another restaurant. But we've eaten there a few times, and as a board, when we were planning this event, we went and ate there, and they're super friendly, the staff there, and so we're really looking forward to hosting our event there. We've got a special banquet room and we'll have a PA system for announcements and our performer, and they're providing us with gender-neutral restrooms for the event, which we're really happy about. So it's a great location. There's also covered parking there, which is accessible if you're driving on Southwest McAdam Avenue. If you turn off of McAdam onto Southwest Sweeney, you can access the covered parking there, and from the parking to the restaurant, there's an accessible ramp that takes you inside and into the restaurant.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Great. It sounds like a great location. You know what? And hopefully you'll have that large crowd like last year. And again, folks, if you want to find links to buying the tickets for this event, you can find the Asian Pacific Islander Pride group on Facebook. Let folks know how to find the other website where the tickets are available.
Sure. Through our blog, which is api-pride.blogspot.com, and then the top blog entry has all the information about our banquet, and there's a link there to purchase tickets online, as well as a link showing the location of the restaurant.
Okay.
And then there's also a link for our email if people still have questions and would like to email us.
And I'm guessing your calendar of events is there too.
Actually, we don't have our updated events there for 2014,
okay.
But we do have all of our events from 2013, so if people want to scroll down, they can get an idea of the types of events that we do. I'm just looking now.
Okay.
So in addition to some of the events I mentioned, we also do Bites for Rights. We support that activity, and Ree, one of our board members, has been super enthusiastic about that in the last couple of years. She's organized kind of like a Bites for Rights restaurant crawl where a group of us will go restaurant hopping to all the different locations in a certain neighborhood to support the Bites for Rights event. I think, yeah.
Right.
And then we also did a lot of, she's a runner, so she likes to organize a lot of participation from our communities in different walkathons and runs throughout the year. So we've supported the Cascade AIDS Walk the last couple of years with the API Pride team. So if people are interested in those types of things, they can get involved that way as well.
Wonderful. And kind of join the group and make a bunch of new friends in the process. That sounds great.
Yes.
So I do have one question that I've been thinking. I'm wondering if other listeners have been thinking. You know, this is an event for, you know, the, you know, celebrating the Asian Pacific Islander Pride and celebrating the Lunar New Year. And I just want to ask, I am not a person of color. I am a Caucasian, you know, a white identified woman. How does the group or how does the community welcome white allies? Like, are white allies welcome at this event?
Yes, so our banquet is open to people who are of API descent, but it's also open to anybody who's a supporter of our community. So, for instance, a lot of people in our community have partners or significant others who are not Asian or Pacific Island of Asian or Pacific Islander descent, and of course they're welcome, and their families are welcome, and a lot of people, we all have friends who aren't, you know, necessarily of Asian or Pacific Islander descent. So everybody is welcome. So anybody who's supportive of our community, and not necessarily a member of our community, but supportive of our community, and by member I use that term, I didn't mean, as supporters they are members of our community, but if they're not of API descent, of course they're still welcome to attend our event.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say that out loud in case anybody else was having those kind of thoughts. So basically, this is a family-friendly event. All ages are welcome, whether you identify as a person of color or not, Asian Pacific Islander or not. If basically everyone, their friends, their allies are welcome. So I love to hear that. And hopefully we will have a very, you know, you'll have a very large, diverse crowd that shows up. That would be great. I know there's a lot of other celebrations happening in the community, you know, starting at the end of this month and moving into February around celebrating the new year. And so it's exciting to see these different celebrations. And I've really enjoyed seeing, you know, what the Asian Pacific Islander Pride organization has been doing in the community here. And so I really appreciate all the work that you and your team of volunteers have made happen. And I'm hoping that you guys have a really awesome banquet. Again, for listeners that didn't get the details, the Lunar New Year banquet is Saturday the 25th from 5:30 to 8:30 in southwest part of Portland. You can find details on Facebook. Look for the Asian Pacific Islander Pride group, or they are also on the Blogspot World. So, Dennis, we need to wrap up our conversation and say our goodbyes, but I want to give you a chance to leave our listeners with any closing thoughts that you might be having.
Thanks, Carla. I just wanted to encourage everybody to come and attend our event and meet some new friends, have some fun, and build some community in Portland. And as we've said before, please go to our website, api-pride.blogspot.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/API Pride, to get more information about our group or about attending our banquet. And Happy New Year to everybody in Portland, and we hope to see you soon at our banquet.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Dennis, and Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Carla.
All right. Take care. Okay, listeners, next we're going to be moving into a music break, and I want to let you know the song we're going to be hearing is from Chris Purica. She's playing here in Portland at the end of the month, Wednesday, January 29th, at the Secret Society, located at 116 Northeast Russell. So the song from Chris Purica is titled Silo Song.
Maybe learned it from your family. Mix in a little of the old. Man, where it seems someone out there built a legacy on keeping everything tied under wraps. Or all the secrets in the silos. You want to whisper under the prayer window. Now we're talking on the telephone. skimming the surface of this ocean. Just skimming the surface of this ocean. You know, no, you're drowning me. You know you're not safe. Swept under the rug so long, oh, darling. Don't wanna get lonely. You're the only one who knows. One who knows, yeah, yeah. All the old encrypted poetry, unintelligible tales of the truth. It's all dripping in mystery. Enough to keep me there, long overdue. Also, honey, honey, drop the metaphor. Honey, honey, won't you come clean? 'Cause you're drowning me, and all you're not saying. Swept under the rug for so long, oh darling. Don't wanna get lonely. You're the only one who knows. One who knows. It's not my strong point. Your tents are illusory. Don't even know it. Don't even know it. So maybe you learned it from your family. Maybe that's just your best excuse. Oh, you could use some New York City. You can use your own talk shows. 'Cause I am drowning in all your not seeing. I won't see your shoulders. I won't rip. Oh, 'cause all I remember are these old big conversations. Oh, when scenic skylines in the trend. Translation.
That song was titled Silo Song from Chris Purica. Chris is on tour, and she's playing here in Portland on Wednesday, January 29th at the Secret Society, located at 116 Northeast Russell Street. So at this point, we're going to segue into a different part of the show this evening. I'm going to be saying goodbye to all y'all, and we're going to be moving into This Way Out, which is the International Gay and Lesbian News Magazine. I just want to do a huge acknowledgement to This Way Out. This is one of the inspirations that turned me on to making queer radio many, many, many years ago, and I used to record This Way Out from the radio onto cassette tape to share with my friends way back in the day. And so I am happy to bring it to you now. This is current news and events from around the world, but you can find these guys online, well, and girls and everybody else. Their website is thiswayout.org, and they are also all volunteer donation-based radio making, their own shade of awesomeness. And before we go to This Way Out, I want to say thank you for listening. My name is Carla. I appreciate you tuning in this evening. If you'd like to get in touch with the Out Loud crew, you can email us at outloudradio@gmail.com. Thank you to Sam, my volunteer engineer this evening, for making me sound like I know what I'm doing. But he's really in charge of the show tonight. If you want to find us online, you can KBOO Out Loud on Facebook and Twitter if you connect via those routes. Again, our email, outloudradio@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, stay proud and live out loud. Here is This Way Out.
It wasn't until after the team let me go that I looked back on all these incidents and said, you know, there's something more to this than the team just cutting an older punter, making room for a newer guy.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement.
I have the opportunity to make sure that people understood, look, I am a lesbian. The fact that I have been fighting your fights doesn't mean that I am going to hide what I am.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Russia's Orthodox Church prays for a gay sex ban, America's NFL gets a cluey about equality, and Puerto Rican culture meets New York's Lavender Revolution. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 11th, 2014. Russia may say it's rolling out a global welcome mat for the Sochi Winter Olympics next month, but gay people are clearly not on the guest list. The country's infamous law banning the dissemination of so-called gay propaganda already has some LGBT athletes and prospective spectators on edge, despite the Putin government's repeated assurances that they'll be safe in Sochi. But the country's politically powerful Russian Orthodox Church called this week for the recriminalization of gay sex through a voter referendum. It comes on the heels of a popular Russian actor earlier in the week calling for gays to be put in ovens. According to Agence France-Presse, church spokesman Vsevolod Chaplin told the pro-government Russian-language newspaper Izvestia that it is precisely the majority of our people and not some outside powers that should decide what should be a criminal offense and what should not. The Soviet government criminalized homosexuality in 1934, and Russia repealed the law in 1993 after the breakup of the Soviet Union. But the vast majority of Russians think homosexuality is either an illness or a crime. Gay activist Edouard Mersin told Agence France-Presse that if you stage a referendum in Russia, 90% would back both the death penalty and the idea of shooting all homosexuals. But a prominent member of President Vladimir Putin's political party, Pavel Krasheninnikov, told the Interfax news agency that Parliament would not even consider such a proposal because it would violate the country's international obligations. That's a pre-Olympic statement, of course.
NBC sports anchor Bob Costas says that he's determined to dedicate some airtime during the network's coverage of the Sochi Olympics to discuss Russia's so-called no-promo-homo law. He told the Associated Press that he wanted President Putin to answer for it on the record. And, according to the Huffington Post, Costas told reporters that if Putin doesn't drag his butt into the studio, then we'll talk about it without him.
Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department joined some other Western governments this week to issue travel warnings for their citizens who plan to go to Sochi. It includes a specific recommendation that LGBT travelers should carefully consider the laws and biases of their international destination and decide how open one can be regarding one's sexual orientation or gender identity. The advisory notes that anyone convicted of breaking Russia's law against disseminating gay propaganda could face fines of more than $3,000, up to 14 days in jail, and deportation.
Updating the continuing story in India, the government has asked the Supreme Court to review its December 11th ruling that recriminalized same-gender sex. A two-judge panel of the Apex Court overturned the 2009 decision by the Delhi High Court that declared the colonial-era Penal Code Section 377, which outlaws intercourse against the order of nature, to be a violation of India's constitution. Some LGBT activists were hoping that the government would take a more aggressive stance and sponsor a repeal measure in Parliament.
The infamous bill to add harsh penalties to already existing laws against homosexual acts in Uganda, including life in prison, still awaits the signature of President Yoweri Museveni. But it's already making life more difficult for HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment workers and their clients. Gay Star News reports that sexual minorities are being viewed as criminals, denied access to antiretroviral drugs, and are going even further underground. One blogger wrote that threats, hateful speeches, and discrimination from religious leaders, politicians, and even biased media are increasing insecurity to peer educators, staff, and the LGBTI community, which is hampering health service delivery. Advocacy groups are warning that it's just a preview of how bad things will get if Museveni signs the bill into law. He has until January 20th to do that, or Parliament can then pass it again without his signature.
In other news, the Chilean Senate approved civil unions legislation for same-gender couples on January 7th. It had been debated on and off in the chamber for the past 2 years. The life partner agreement would allow lesbian and gay couples to certify their unions with the civil registry rather than with a notary. Those couples would be eligible for most of the benefits offered to heterosexual couples except adoption, which is still a dicey issue in many countries. Activists expect the measure to receive final passage by March when current President Sebastián Piñera is succeeded by the newly elected Michelle Bachelet. She said in a recent interview that she would consider endorsing full civil marriage equality. The Senate vote on the civil unions bill was an overwhelming 28 in favor, 6 against, and 2 abstentions. According to the English-language Santiago Times, emotional supporters cheered and evangelical opponents held up banners with biblical messages aimed at lawmakers from the stands of the upper house. The bill goes next to a constitutional committee before returning to Congress later this month. Elsewhere on the continent, Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil have already opened civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples.
There were further developments this week in the continuing battle over marriage equality in Utah. Some 1,360 same-gender couples married in the U.S. state between December 20th when U.S. District Court Judge Robert Shelby declared Utah's ban on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples to be unconstitutional, and January 6th when the U.S. Supreme Court approved an emergency stay of the ruling requested by Utah's state government. Republican Governor Gary Herbert said earlier this week that those couples won't be legally recognized by the state until its challenge to the federal judge's ruling is finally resolved, quite possibly in America's highest court. But on January 10th, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder announced that the federal government will recognize those 1,360 same-gender Utah couples as legally married. He cited the Supreme Court's June 2013 DOMA ruling that legally married lesbian and gay couples are entitled to equal protection and treatment under the law.
I am confirming today that for purposes of federal law, these marriages will be recognized as lawful and considered eligible for all relevant federal benefits on the same terms as other same-sex marriages. These families should not be asked to endure uncertainty regarding their status as the litigation unfolds.
Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union is preparing its own lawsuit to directly challenge Utah's constitutional ban on marriage equality.
In other U.S. marriage equality news, 4 Arizona couples have filed suit in federal court challenging that state's definition of civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual. Voters added that provision to the Arizona Constitution in 2008. 2 of the plaintiff couples married in California, but Arizona's constitution prevents the state from recognizing those marriages. All 4 couples are longtime residents of the Grand Canyon State. 2 of them are also raising adopted children. Sean Aiken, one of the attorneys representing the couples, told local reporters that the lawsuit points out how unfair Arizona's refusal to recognize out-of-state marriages or allow in-state marriages is, how that affects not just couples, but whole families, and the effect it has on children. Also, hearings are expected to begin in Austin in the coming week in a federal lawsuit challenging the constitutional amendment banning marriage equality in the state of Texas.
And in New Mexico, opponents of marriage equality, established on December 19th by a unanimous state Supreme Court ruling, are pushing a constitutional amendment to overturn that ruling. But an informal survey of New Mexico lawmakers by Albuquerque's KOB-TV revealed that there's not much appetite for this issue in the 30-day legislative session that starts January 21st.
Among some names in the news this week, retired international soccer midfielder Thomas Hitzlsperger came out as a gay man in an interview with the German magazine Die Zeit. The Munich-born footballer has represented the German national team in more than 50 appearances and has played for top-tier clubs in England, Germany, and Italy. He told the magazine that he hopes his coming out will advance the discussion of homosexuality among professional athletes. Response among players and fans to the revelation has been almost universally supportive.
Joseph Loun, who resigned on the eve of winning his fourth term as mayor of the West Texas city of San Angelo in 2009 to live in Mexico with his undocumented gay partner, was legally married to him in a ceremony in Mexico City this week. Loun wed his spouse, who asked not to be identified because he still has relatives living in the United States, with about a dozen family members and friends looking on. The demise of DOMA last June opened the door to the now legally married couple's return to the United States if they so desire.
And finally, comedy icon Lily Tomlin and her creative and life partner of 42 years, Jane Wagner, finally made honest women of each other by marrying on New Year's Eve in New York City. Tomlin and Wagner co-wrote 6 comedy television specials in which Tomlin starred. They also co-wrote and produced Tomlin's one-woman show, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, the Grammy Award-winning album, Edith Ann and That's the Truth, and Grammy-nominated albums, Modern Scream and On Stage. Tomlin said that the U.S. Supreme Court's rulings in June that overturned DOMA and ended the Proposition 8 ban on civil marriage equality in California got her and Wagner thinking about making things legal. She told E! Online that, "Everybody I know who got married, they say it really makes a difference. They feel very, very happy about it. You don't really need to get married," she added, "but marriage is awfully nice."
And that's the truth.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 11th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sarah Sweeney.
A U.S. National Football League veteran has been making news by scoring touchdowns for LGBT rights. He's double-teamed for this interview by Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones.
Our next guest first came to our attention in 2012 when he gave a Maryland state delegate a very colorful and wonderful schooling in free speech and LGBT rights that went viral. That's also where we learned that he was not only a great football player, but a pretty darn entertaining writer. Shortly after that, NFL punter Chris Cluey lost his position with the Minnesota Vikings.
And on Thursday, Cluey published a letter on Deadspin.com entitled, "I was an NFL player until I was fired by two cowards and a bigot."
For our listeners who don't quite know the whole story, I don't know if you can briefly sort of tell us.
It started during the off-season of my last year with the Vikings when I got contacted by a group called Minnesotans for Marriage Equality. That was wondering if I was interested in helping defeat the marriage amendment in Minnesota, which would have banned same-sex marriage. And I said, yeah, that seems like a worthwhile cause, and it's something worth speaking out on. So I contacted the Vikings legal department, you know, made sure that everything I was doing would be okay with the team. They said, yeah, it's fine, as long as you make it clear you're acting as a private citizen and not as Chris Cluey speaking for the Vikings, and which I felt was fair. And so started speaking out on the issue. And, you know, the momentum started rolling and rolling. And at the same time, there were some incidents going on within the team that were making me feel a little uncomfortable. Some interactions with my special teams coach and some things that the head coach said about me not being able to speak out. And it wasn't until after the team let me go that I looked back on all these incidents and said, you know, there's something more to this than the team just cutting an older punter, making room for a newer guy. Because that entire year, I'd been doing everything the coaches wanted. My numbers were exactly the same as they had always been, and I still had a year left on my contract. And I had no indication that the Vikings were going to cut me. No one had ever said they were displeased with my performance or that I was punting poorly. So it was a story that I knew I wanted to tell at some point, and I wrote it all down and put it away for safekeeping until I knew I wanted to tell it. And I just put it on Deadspin last week.
And you're telling it now and getting a lot of attention for it. And you've got dates and times and quotes and everything else, and I can't help but wonder if you're sort of preparing yourself for a legal challenge.
I knew that if I wanted to tell the story, then everything I said, had to be factually accurate and it had to be able to be backed up, because Otherwise, this is the easiest defamation of character lawsuit in the history of the United States. I mean, you can't attack someone's character like that unless it's true, unless it is something that they said, and unless there are witnesses to your events that are willing to back you up. Since the Vikings have said they're going to do an independent investigation, and you know the people they've hired look trustworthy, and they've done stuff like this in the past, a very important thing for me is ensuring that my witness's anonymity remains intact, because being blacklisted in the NFL is a very real possibility, and that's something that I absolutely do not want to happen to my friends and former teammates. And so, you know, this is something that I'm going to insist on, is the fact that I'll give you names, dates, whatever, but, you know, you have to protect these people.
You know, I noticed that you've been very, very respectful of your teammates. You talk a lot about how they've actually been quite supportive.
Yeah, I've never had any problems with my teammates. You know, these are guys I played with out on the field, shared a locker room with. You know, during the season, we see each other more than we see our own families. So it's, you know, you get to know those guys pretty well. And it's something that was also behind the timing of this, was this wasn't something I wanted to drop on the team during the start or the middle of the season, because this would definitely have been a distraction to the team, and it would have impacted their chances of winning games. And again, that's not something I want to do to former teammates.
How is your family doing with this? Because it's one thing to be, you know, related to a football player, but now you're so well known well outside of the world of football.
My wife kind of rolls her eyes at me. She's not a big fan of, you know, of the, like having to do interviews and stuff like that. But at the same time, she understands, you know, it's definitely for a worthwhile cause, and it's for speaking out on human rights and treating people the right way. So she puts up with my shenanigans. Other than that, my daughters are too young to really understand what's going on.
The investigation's happening. What are you hoping that the outcome of this is?
Well, obviously that I'm vindicated, and the investigators find that, yes, all of this did happen, and it was, you know, how Chris described it. And then ultimately, I'd like to see this used as an example of, you know, hey, this didn't just happen to me. This happens to people across the United States day in and day out. And this is a problem that we have to deal with as a society. This is a problem we have to address. And you know, how are we going to go about changing things so that stuff like this doesn't happen in the future?
Former Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluey spoke with Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. An informed community is a strong community.
Prepare your palate for the spicy Puerto Rican portion of the LGBT movement's menu later in the program.
Down the street, that's the way he shuffles his feet. What if they were talking about when he goes walking by? He's my guy.
A recent move by the U.S. Postal Service gets Queer Life and Literature commentator Janet Mason's stamp of approval.
Now that Harvey Milk is on the stamp, I'll be able to ask her him by name whenever I go to the post office. The announcement was made close to the 35th anniversary of the assassination of Harvey Milk, who became the first openly gay official to hold public office when he was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in 1977. The Harvey Milk stamp, which will be issued in 2014, is being heralded as perhaps depicting the first openly gay LGBT figure. However, Harvey Milk is not the first. One notable exception was James Baldwin. Baldwin was perhaps ambiguously out, but he was the author of Giovanni's Room, one of the first gay novels. He is known for his identity as an African-American writer, as a gay writer, and as a great literary figure in general. When a stamp was issued in 2004, my partner, now a retired postal worker, came home with stories about a coworker who asked her if Baldwin was indeed that way, a customer who said he would take any other stamp other than the one with Baldwin's face on it, and another who said he was a great man, I had the honor of meeting him once. My partner's response to hearing that Harvey Milk was going to be on the stamp was one of wonder. Wow, that's deep. I wonder what people will have to say about that. Undoubtedly, some will be thrilled, others repulsed, and unfortunately, a great many will be indifferent. Harvey Milk is a great American hero. I was in high school when he was elected to public office, and he is someone who influenced my life greatly. The fact that Anita Bryant, the former Miss Oklahoma, who was best known perhaps as an outspoken opponent of homosexuality, was on the national news denouncing Harvey Milk meant that there were others like me out there. Before the movie Milk, the box office hit starring Sean Penn in 2008, there was a documentary called The Times of Harvey Milk that I saw when it first came out in 1984. I had a ticket for the premiere showing at the Roxy Movie Theater on Samsman Street in Philadelphia. I was 25 and had come out a few years before. Inside this small but cozy theater, the audience was comprised mainly of gay men with a few pockets of lesbians here and there. The Times of Harvey Milk opened with Dianne Feinstein as the first female president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, announcing that,
as president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement. Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
As the documentary progressed, with the narration of Harvey Firestein, the delightfully husky-voiced gay icon, and one of the few openly gay actors at the time, I became aware of an unusual sound coming from all around me. I realized then that it was the sound of men sitting in the dark, softly crying. In those days, my activist life was divided into two camps: women's liberation, which is where most of the lesbians were, and the gay movement, at that time still predominantly men. Often I was the person who brought the two groups together in my activist community. Today, gay men and lesbians are working together, and we are a force to be reckoned with. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
LGBT Puerto Ricans have been on the front lines of key public issues in New York City since Stonewall, all the while fighting for respect from both the LGBT community and from other Latinos. Correspondent Kelly Cogswell asked three prominent out LGBT Puerto Ricans about their activist lives.
Margarita Lopez started early. At 15, she fought U.S. recruiters grabbing her friends for Vietnam. Later, she worked with poor women, then black Puerto Ricans struggling to save their homes. She also helped start the island's first LGBT group, Comité de Orgullo Gay. Those early activist years had a price, and in 1978 she was forced to leave the island where she was born.
I was beat up 3 times in Puerto Rico on the street. I was not demonstrating, I was not talking to nobody. I was just walking on the street, and because the way I look, you know, these people felt offended. Then I also couldn't find a job. In Puerto Rico at that time, in order for you to get a job, any job, you needed to get a letter of good conduct from the police department. Then by definition, I'm not going to have good conduct.
Luis Santiago had his own thick file with the Puerto Rican cops. He co-founded a gay group around 1980, and before that was a member of a pro-independent student union, until he got thrown out for officially proposing the group end discrimination against gays. He came to New York a couple years later to find a job, and in 1990 helped establish the Latino Caucus of ACT UP, a direct action group fighting AIDS. They pushed for information in Spanish and for important programs like the Needle Exchange.
There were some gay white men that came from a privileged background that the idea that they were in some way connected to the IV drug user in the Lower East Side was a little too far for them. The stretch was too big to cross. In general, I say the majority started crossing that that bridge. It was a learning process for them too. You know, I think they did learn that you know, in the end, you know, they're discriminated the same way we were discriminated. You know, they were ignored the same we were ignored.
Hispanic AIDS organizations had to learn the same lesson when it came to gay men.
They didn't really want to, you know, identify themselves so closely with the gay issues. They wouldn't go straight and talk, Latino gay men, this is what's happening to you. But they would go like, you know, there's an AIDS crisis, everybody's impacted. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do, and this ambiguity about it that reveal a fear of identifying too close with certain groups.
That fear looked a lot like hate during the 1992 fight over the rainbow curriculum. Designed to teach little kids of all races to respect each other, it was widely attacked because a few pages mentioned lesbians and gay men. Margarita Lopez had already worked 15 years on the Lower East Side when she stood up to defend the curriculum.
It was painful, that meeting. Very painful. Because I saw people who knew me, who knew that I fought for their child to get in the school that didn't exist, and the school was created. And I saw people that I worked with them to have the landlord allow them to continue to live in that apartment because the landlord was lying about that they didn't pay rent. And they have paid the rent. And we have the record. And I helped that to happen. And they did not get evicted. Then it was painful to see the same people not being honest enough about this issue and saying that they didn't want their children exposed to these ideas. But what was important for me about that was that I had the opportunity to make sure that people understood, look, I am a lesbian. The fact that I have been fighting your fights doesn't mean that I am going to hide what I am. And it's time for you to understand.
Gradually, they began to. Born in Brooklyn, Rosie Mendez witnessed the changes firsthand. She saw Margarita Lopez get elected to New York City Council as the first out and proud Latina lesbian and served for a few years as her chief of staff. Now the council member herself, Rosie describes being in Margarita's office one day when an elderly religious couple returned for a visit.
I remembered them. I said, oh, do you, did the problem come back or, you know, what problems you have now? They go, no, just wanted to thank you. I wanted to thank you and Margarita because of you, we have, they're still holding their Bibles, so we have opened up our eyes a little bit more. Our grandson is gay. When he told his parents, my child, they beat him up and threw him out of the house. He came to us and we took him in. And he's living with us and he takes care of us. But it's because we met you and Margarita and you're here in the community that we weren't afraid of that.